All right, welcome to this afternoon's session on ASP.NET Ajax version 4. My name is Fritz Onion, and I work for a company called Pluralsight. We do developer training for Microsoft technologies, and we have both in-classroom training as well as on-demand subscription-based training on the web. And we have a booth out here during the conference. I encourage you to come chat with us about what we have available. I have my contact information up here if you want to drop me a line after the talk or just get follow my blog or my Twitter feed. They're all listed right down here. One other thing I wanted to make note of is I will upload all of the demos that I'm going to show you throughout the talk here to this URL later this afternoon as soon as I get a strong connection. And you'll be able to download all the demos that I've worked through and try them out yourself on your own machines if you choose to do so. Okay, so that's link.pluralsight.com/devdays10ajax, and I'll put that up at the end as well. Okay, so so we're here to talk about ASP.NET Ajax, the library, and I have a bit of good news, bad news for you in terms of this library. It was officially supposed to be released with the ASP.NET 4 release, which is coming out of part of .NET 4 and Visual Studio 2010. But as of, I think, about 12 days ago now, they've announced that they're not putting any more active development into the client-side ASP.NET Ajax framework. So, which was a surprise to me, having scheduled all these talks on the new client-side framework. So before you all jump up and run out of the room, because it's not a technology that's going to exist anymore, let me tell you what's happening that I know so far. And honestly, I'm not sure the team knows exactly what's going to happen in terms of their client-side story in the immediate future. But what they officially announced, what Stephen Walther officially announced just less than 2 weeks ago, was that they're taking their development efforts from the client-side Ajax library and putting them into building jQuery extensions to replace a lot of the functionality that they've built in the client-side library. So that's still in a very nascent state, right? There isn't a lot of stuff out there. They do have a recommendation for the templating model for jQuery that they're proposing, and they have a sample on how to implement it. But it's all very early stages, and it's going to have to go through the standard jQuery approval process. And so what I hope to give you in this talk today is, first of all, to bring you that news so that you don't start building a lot of new stuff on top of client-side ASP.NET Ajax, because they really are not moving forward with it as of 10 days ago. Having said that, all the concepts in this library that I will talk about today and show you this concrete implementation of are things they are going to work to migrate into their own jQuery plugins. So ideally, if everything goes the way they anticipate, all of the features that I'm showing you today in the existing client-side library will be available in one form or another in jQuery. So if you've been avoiding jQuery up until now, it would be a good time to start looking at it, just as an FYI. let's see what else. So we'll talk about exactly what that, you know, what that means in terms of you and what you might want to focus on. I'm going to start with a brief overview of the server-side portion of ASP.NET Ajax. That's going to still be there in the .NET 4 release, and it's going to be fully supported, you know, indefinitely. So, you know, if you're using update panels or anything like that, all that stuff is baked in, ready to go. The toolkit controls are all going to be completely available, so that's not an issue. How many of you right now, I'm just curious, are currently using the update panel and the server-side features of ASP.NET Ajax? A lot of you. Great. Okay. So you're good, right? You stay right there. You're fine. All that stuff is still going to work. I just out of curiosity, how many of you are actively using the client-side Ajax libraries? So doing some client-side work? Yeah, not as many. Well, still quite a few. Okay. You're fine too, but you might want to start looking more at jQuery. just so you know. And what I mean by fine is they're obviously not going to pull any of this stuff, right? It's all going to be there in typical Microsoft fashion. They're still going to have support for it and everything. But it's just not where active new development is going to happen in the future. So, and I must say, I'm really happy they've done this, to be honest with you, right? That the fact that they have recognized that jQuery is such a widely recognized and adopted client-side framework, and that they're going to put efforts to building out that library, that the team deserves a lot of kudos for recognizing that and actually taking that step and saying, we're not going to try to build something completely distinct from and separate from, which gives you yet another stack to work with. So the end result is for us developers, web developers, having just the jQuery story for the client-side stuff and the Ajax server stuff is a nice distinction, right? Not having to deal with both together. Okay, so the other good news about, I told you this is good news, bad news. So the other good news about them not really putting any more work into this library is that you really don't have to focus on the details that I'm going to show you here today. Right? So just think, get the concept, think about how it works, and that's going to resurface in another form or another. If you do find some of these features useful that you see today, they are fine with you using the existing JavaScript files that implement these features. So you can absolutely do that. And I'll show you, there's some pretty compelling stuff in here. But just like I said, future development efforts are going into jQuery equivalents. Okay. With that out of the way, let's talk about what is in the client-side library. So they've come up with a model for client-side data sources. There's a script. They've done a bunch of refactoring in the script libraries. There's a new client script manager. And let me just also caveat this by saying a lot of the work that went into this client-side library, their goal was to make these features accessible to users that were not building ASP.NET pages necessarily. So you wouldn't have to have a script manager in place to use these features. You could do it with a straight HTML page, or you could use ASP.NET MVC very easily, and you could use it in conjunction with jQuery. They've been working with jQuery quite tightly for the last year. So all these features they've added are pretty much independent of ASP.NET, and they're just these client-side libraries you can bring in, which is kind of nice. Okay, so client script manager, there's client template rendering. This is the big one, client template rendering. And this is the one feature they're really pushing to get into jQuery. So we will see one form or another of client template rendering going forward. I'm going to go show you their specific implementation here, and then that will carry forward one way or another. Live data binding, how do you associate data from one control to another in the client-side DOM. The observer pattern, which you might have run across yourself in JavaScript. The ADONET service proxy, so there's a class that makes it easy to consume the ADONET data services, which are now called the WCF data services, which is a REST-based API that's exposed on top of an entity framework data source. And of course, the inclusion of and support for jQuery. So they've, like I said, been working closely with the jQuery team for quite a while now. And as you'll see, they've actually brought in, they made it very easy to use jQuery with other pieces of their client-side framework. So, okay. Let's start with something that is not going to change, that is absolutely there, and everything you use here is going to still work. So the script manager itself, they've done a few enhancements. For the most part, they haven't made a lot of changes to the server-side ASP.NET Ajax story, just so you know. So everything you know about it today is pretty much the way it is. They've added a few additional attributes to the script manager. So it's easier to do things like refactor exactly what subset of scripts you want to bring in. And you can also do mark this flag right here called enable CDN, which will tell the script manager to load the scripts from the content delivery network that Microsoft has set up. So that if you want to serve them, if you want to load those scripts from their remote servers instead of your own server, you can do that with just a flip of a switch. So let me just bring up a couple of demos here. And these are all running in .NET 4, but they pretty much work the same as they did in .NET 3.5. And those of you doing update panel stuff today, this is probably something like what you're doing. So the update panel features, let's just go down here to the script manager briefly. So here's the script manager, and you can see we've got a couple of new attributes that are available. So there's the enable CDN attribute that says pull all the scripts from the content delivery network. And the other feature that's available, the other attribute, is the Ajax framework mode. And you can see this thing gives you the ability to select whether the Ajax framework is loaded into this page or not. You can actually enable it or disable it. So those of you that have used the script manager in the past to actually load client-side scripts of your own, you can do that without actually loading the ASP.NET Ajax scripts. Before, it was an all-or-nothing kind of thing. And then they also gave us the option to be explicit about which ASP.NET Ajax scripts you want to bring in. So in the past, it was kind of, again, all-or-nothing. Now you can be more explicit about it and tell it which subset of features you want to work with. So those are the two sort of minor enhancements to the script manager control. But those of you using the update panel to turn your postbacks in a web form application into Ajax callbacks, how many of you are also using the what is it called? Update panel and the thing that shows you progress, the update progress control. That's what I meant. How many are using the update progress control? Quite a few of you. So does anyone know what behavior you get when you're using the update progress control if the user keeps submitting the post back and it takes more than a half a second to delay? Have you seen this behavior? So if I go to update progress, here it is. And I've got a simple little update panel that's wrapping a data grid, or a grid view in this case. And I put an intentional delay in the query so that it takes a while to do the update. So there's my update progress down below popping up. And it got sorted. But notice what happens if I click this once, and then twice, and then three times. And sometimes you get impatient users like this, right? They just sit there and they continue clicking, hoping that something's going to happen. But notice the effect I'm getting. What's happening to all those previous calls that were issued? They pretty much get tossed out, right? It's the last one that comes back that actually wins in the end, right? Now, it turns out that's not a difficult behavior to tweak if you want to. And I have an example here that I'll provide you as part of the downloads. You can actually integrate into the client-side object model that the update panel uses with the page manager and some other client-side objects. And let me show you the behavior, the changed behavior that I've added to this particular update panel. So when the user clicks on this, if he gets impatient and clicks twice, I just give him a little gentle message, right, that recommends that the user stop clicking that link and wait for the results to come back from the first time. So if you want to do something like this, maybe a little less demeaning, right, you can do that, like I said, quite easily. So I have just a standard update panel with an update progress control on here, and this is literally all the code that I've added. This is client-side JavaScript that I've added into the bottom of the page, and I could have put this into a separate file to isolate it. And what I did was I added a reference or a handler to the initialize request event, and that's going to be called every time you initiate an asynchronous postback from within your page. And then once I get inside of that function, which I called check status, I can go get the page request manager, and I can ask it, am I in the middle of an asynchronous postback already? So, in my particular page, I happen to know that this is the only way this postback would be initiated. Then I can say, let's terminate the current request by setting cancel to true on the arguments passed in, and then I print out my little extra message that shows the user, right, that I'm actually doing something. Otherwise, we just continue about our business. So there are a lot of nice things in the update panel you might not have explored before, where you can sort of integrate with the client-side page script manager and, you know, tweak the behavior slightly if it's not exactly what you're looking for. So I have a number of examples in this demo sequence right here that I'll just include as part of the demo download for this talk. But I did want to make sure that you know, we touched on some of those features before we jumped into the new stuff. Okay, so let me tell you what I know about the AJAX library today. All of this on the slide, as far as I know today, is still true. In fact, I just verified it 5 minutes ago, or 10 minutes ago. So you can still get the AJAX client library on codeplex.com. If you go to ajax.codeplex.com, you'll see their AJAX page. And there's some nice documentation, some samples, some tutorials even, up on asp.net/AJAX library. This is a good place to go look at the documentation for the toolkit controls, for example. There's some really nice examples of using the client-side versions of those. all the scripts are downloadable now through the CDN, the AJAX Content Developer Network, or Delivery Network. And you can use this in your own applications, and we'll talk more about how to do it and what scripts are available there for you in a little bit. The other significant change is the toolkit controls. How many of you are actively using the ASP.NET AJAX toolkit in your implementation? Yeah, quite a few of you. This is a really popular toolkit. People are downloading it, you know, tens of thousands of downloads per week off the website. And the way it's implemented today, you have to install the toolkit yourself into your project. And typically, you put it in the bin directory and then reference it in the server-side controls in your pages. So one of the things they're doing in the next release is they're going to roll it into the core release of ASP.NET. And as far as I know, this has not changed, so it should be true, in the sense that you'll be able to use the toolkit controls directly without doing a separate installation. And on your server, you won't have to deploy anything to the bin directory. They'll just be there, right, as part of the .NET 4 release. So the toolkits are rolled in, our toolkit controls are rolled in as part of the core framework. And so all that stuff you've used before in the toolkit controls in terms of the extenders, right, adding an extender to a text box, that type of thing, all that's still there and should work even more seamlessly than it did before. The other significant change is that most of the controls are also now available as separate client-side controls. And again, as far as I know, this is still going to be true, right? They're still going to make these controls, these toolkit controls, available as separate client-side controls. And what this means is that if you're building like an ASP.NET MVC application, where you don't have access to server-side controls, so you can't use the server-side toolkit controls, you can use the new client-side stuff. So I'll show you an example of that, how to bring in a client-side toolkit control and work with it. And they've also, their initial intent for the entire client-side AJAX library was to put it out there as another library people could use, you know, along the lines of jQuery and such. And their goal was to put it into codeplex.org as a shared source release. Now, that I'm not sure about, to be honest with you. I'm not sure they're sure about what's going to happen right there. So take that with a grain of salt, I guess. OK, and as far as support for the library, again, I can't comment on exactly what's happening there. OK, so let's take a look at some of the features that are in here. Again, as I mentioned, the post from Stephen Walther indicates that they are working actively with John Resig, the creator of jQuery, and talking about how to integrate these specific features into jQuery. So their goal is absolutely to take all the features that I'm showing you here and bring them into the jQuery library. We just don't have any time frames right now. So the client script loader, this is something they added to make it easier to load JavaScript files that you need to use some of these features and do it all from client-side script. And this was an answer to a lot of people wondering how they should be loading scripts when they're using like ASP.NET MVC, where you don't have the script manager control. How do you load the scripts in the right order? How do you know which ones need to be loaded, that kind of thing? So what they did was they built a client-side object, the script loader, which supports on-demand loading. It supports proper sequencing of the scripts based on dependencies that they have predefined in their hierarchy of files. And they've also added this really nice feature called what we just use, sys.require. So instead of going in and saying, I want to load ajax.js and ajaxwebforms.js or ASP.NET Ajax, you don't have to know the file names. All you have to do is say, I want to work with this client-side object, right? Which in this case is sys.components.dataView. So you just say sys.require blah, right? Whatever you want to use, and it will take care of loading that. And when it's done, it will invoke this function, the onReady function. So one of the things they are were promoting in this library was instead of relying on page load in the Ajax libraries, they were moving more towards the onReady model, which is very similar to the jQuery dollar function. It gets called right after all the page is loaded and all the scripts are in place, so you know you can start using these features. So they had something similar onReady, and you can start using that as soon as all the files are loaded. Now they also, and this is intentionally small and hard to read, I just wanted to fit it all into one screen, but there are two things you can specify in the sys.require, in that line. You can either specify the component, the client-side object you want to work with, or you can specify one of these names. Let me just zoom it in for you. So you can specify names like this, adio.net, core, data context, history, jQuery, which will bring in the version of jQuery that they're currently supporting. And this will automatically bring in those scripts for you. So they have this whole dependency structure set up among all the scripts that they've refactored. And this list of strings can be used to load in the subset of scripts that you need to work with, right? And it'll load all the ones in the right order and makes it easy to work with. So let me just show you an example of this. I'm going to go open up another site I have here, client data binding. So in this example, all right, let me go to the next one. In this example, I am using, I'm bringing in a single file. So the basic idea is you need to bring in the start script file. And this is a very small file that you just include in your page, and it will automatically load the client script manager for you and make this stuff work. And then what you do is in your initialization script, call sys.require, and in this case I'm telling it I want to use the toolkit control calendar, and I'd also want to use the toolkit control watermark, and I want to bring in the jQuery scripts as well. So I'm using the sys.scripts.jQuery and then components for the other two. So you can choose which model you want to follow. And then I'm actually using jQuery in this case to select something and attribute it with a particular toolkit control. So let me actually go back to this one here. Yeah, I'm also using it here. So this is the same idea. So I'm just using the start script. For the toolkit controls right now, you still have to include the extended controls as well. But once you do that, you can do sys.require. I'm telling it I want all three of these controls, the calendar, the watermark, and the color picker. And I want the client-side versions of these things. And then I can use sys.create to create a watermark on the element whose identifier is date input, which is an input element down here. So notice they've also support this jQuery-like selector syntax as part of the creation of all the toolkit controls. And so I'm creating a watermark on the first one, I'm creating a calendar on the first one, and I'm putting a color picker on this one right here. So this is the same effect you would get if you added an extender control to your server-side text box, but now we're doing it completely in client-side script and making the association with an HTML DOM element. So if I run this, Notice my watermark text showed up inside of the input element. If I click on it, I get the selection of the date. And down here, if I click on it, I get the color picker toolkit control. Okay. So those are all now available as client-side controls that you can load implicitly. Okay, so that's the list of the aliases you can use when you're trying to figure out which piece you want. But again, it just boils down to this line right here. Right, it's bringing a single line of single script file, and then tell it what pieces of the infrastructure you want to work with, and it'll figure out the right dependencies for you. This thing is also extensible. You can add your own scripts into the loading mechanism, and you can add dependencies if you want to. So it's a pretty interesting implementation. And like I said, they're looking to move something similar into jQuery. So exactly how that manifests itself sort of remains to be seen, but that's the goal. Okay, the CDN. So Microsoft also launched the content delivery network for loading scripts that they anticipate people using in their applications. And there are a couple potential advantages to loading these scripts from the CDN as opposed to your own servers. One is that Microsoft is caching the CDN across multiple edge servers around the world. So there's a good chance that someone accessing your site will be able to load that script file from a server that is closer to them than where your home base server is. And the other possibility is that if we have a lot of different applications using the CDN to load their scripts, then client browsers will have cached versions of a lot of these scripts already in place from the same referred URL. And cross-application script caching will happen, right? So the user might not even have to go back to the CDN to retrieve it if some other application that that user was working with already loaded the script into their browser. And if you go to this URL right here, ASP.NET/AJAX/CDN, let's just launch this, ASP.NET/AJAX/CDN. This gives you a nice little description of what the CDN is, how it works, a couple of top-level references on how to bring files, bring script files into your site, how to bring jQuery in, how to bring the AJAX releases in, et cetera. All right. So that was the CDN, and that was what the option was in the script manager. If you set enable CDN, it would pull the scripts down from there as opposed to looking in your local directory. Okay. So toolkit controls, I just showed you a couple of them, the watermark, the color picker, and the calendar. These are all available now as controls in the script file, so client-side only, like I was showing you. And this page right here has some really good documentation on it. If you just go to ajax.microsoft.com/ajax, and look at the toolkit controls there. It shows you all the things, all the controls and how to use them with client-side examples. So here's another example for you, very similar. I just bring in the start script file. I bring in the extended controls, which is where the toolkit elements are right now. And then I use the sys.require to pull in the rest of the scripts. So very easy to work with. And then jQuery. Right from the beginning, they intended to have a very strong jQuery integration, and that's there today as well. So if you notice in this other example that I was showing you here, I was able to use the jQuery function to perform a selection on an element within the DOM, and then I can use the jQuery extension for the calendar toolkit control and actually at request that it adorn the input element that it was selected with the jQuery retrieval with the calendar. And notice the way I brought these in was using sys.require, and I brought in the two toolkit controls that I wanted to bring in. You have to do each of these specifically, so you only bring in the subset of scripts necessary to do what you want to do. And then I asked it to bring in jQuery as well, which brought in the current drop of jQuery up on the CDN. And here's my code in the actual body. So let's just run this. So I should see both a watermark and a calendar on here, which we do. Now let's do something a little bit more jQuery-like. right, let's go in here. Let's add a couple other input elements. Another text one here. And let's set a CSS class equal to date type, like so. And I'm just going to use that CSS class to annotate all of the input elements that I want to specify as date controls. And let's just put 4 in here. And let's make the third one not be a date type. And then up here, I should be able to write a little jQuery selection. So I can do dollar select the class date type and then set the attribute value equal to date field, just for fun. And then let's set watermark, or a calendar rather, on those individual elements. So you have all the expressive declarative power of jQuery at your hands, and you can integrate the toolkit controls directly as client-side elements. So if this is right, we should have, good, so I have date fields filled in for 3 of the 4, right, that were annotated or that class type. And if I click in each one, I get the date calendar toolkit control. And I click in this one, I get nothing. And this one, I get the, whoa. Oh, I have an ID conflict. So I should have done proper JavaScript here, or HTML. Put in some IDs, date input 2. And let's do one more. 3. And one more. Okay, so, although it's not a date input, but good, no, good. Okay, so very easy to take in any of the controls. Now, one thing just to note, if you start using these client-side toolkit implementations, you do need to be careful to bring in all the resources necessary to render the controls. Like, a lot of these controls have associated style sheets with them. So you notice up here, I've included an explicit link to the calendar CSS, and I had to just put that into my project so I could include that. So all these client-side controls, many of the more complex ones have associated style sheets that you want to bring in as well. And this is all documented on that page that I was mentioning. If you go to Ajax, ajax.asp.net, it will walk you through the steps there. Okay, so let's take a look at client templates. One of the goals of this release was to really give more assistance to developers when they've pulled data back across an Ajax server-side retrieval. So we've had nice support in the past for creating script callable services with WCF or ASMX. And when you get back to the client, you have this JSON structure consisting of all the data that you retrieved from your web service. But then the question for the developer is, what do you do with it, right? What do you do with this JSON object that was instantiated for you and filled up with data from your server? And the answer in the past has typically been, well, go reach into the DOM and create some new elements and show it to the user and let the user interact with it somehow and then send it back maybe. It was a lot of manual client-side work. And a lot of people were using jQuery to help with some of it, and others were just using straight DOM APIs. And these were all options, but it all felt somewhat primitive relative to what you're capable of doing on the server. Right? On the server, we had this nice declarative data binding model where you could set up a repeater or a list view or what have you, and then you could create these data binding templates and have it replicate the template for each item in the result set. So what they wanted to do was bring that same mechanism to the client. Right? So let me just show you how this works. So let's go from ground zero here. So I'm going to go add a new page. And let's just to show you that it's all client-side stuff, let's create an HTML page. So let's call this test client template, like so. So here's my vanilla HTML page. And what I'm going to do is I put in all of the script files from the Ajax library in my local scripts directory. And the only one I technically need to get started is, of course, the start script. And there's a debug version and a release version. So I put that in. And then I write a little JavaScript here so that we can load the data view. So I'm going to do sys.require. Notice we're getting some nice IntelliSense here. Visual Studio 2010 picks up on all of the client-side features they have built. And I'm going to pass in sys.components.dataView. So this is the primary object responsible for setting up the client templating mechanism and associating it with a collection of data. And when this thing finishes, here's another way you can do this, by the way, is you can just write a ready function that will be called as soon as the scripts are all loaded. So if you want to embed this all in a single function call, you can, as I'm doing right here. So inside of here, what I want to do is create a data view and initialize it with some data. And let me just go up here and put a little data in. I'm going to copy it across from another file that I have. So we can do this. Okay, so I'm going to copy this in-memory JavaScript collection of data, just an array of courses and course codes. And then down here, I'm going to say sys.create.dataView. Like so. And we specify the target and the properties. So the target is going to be some element in the DOM you want to associate this thing with. So let's give it an ID of course list, like so. And then the object properties is going to be a JavaScript object with name value pairs, which will include the data. What do you actually want to bind this thing to? And I want to bind it to my courses array. And as we'll see later, this is going to be an obvious thing to do when you retrieve data from your server to simply associate it with a data view, which is then bound to a client-side DOM element, and ask it to enumerate the data source and replicate the template. So let's go create this course list now. And to keep things simple, I'm going to put this in a table, something that's easy to iterate across. Put a row in, and let's put a couple of cells in here. Okay. Now, the way this works, the way the client templating works, is you annotate the particular object with the, that you want to have replicated below it. So I'm going to specify the ID of this table equal to be course, let's call it table, since it's not really a list, course table. Okay. And the other thing you want to do is specify a class, CSS class, equal to sys-template. And this is a key they look for in the binding mechanism. So the convention is set the class of your template to the sys-template CSS class and go define the CSS class up in your styles as a sys-template. And just set display equal to none. And what that will do is make sure that when the page first loads, before the data has actually been retrieved, whether it's from the server or locally, it will not be visible. The user won't be able to see the markup that I'm about to put in here. So then the last thing to do, what this means literally, is this data view is now going to take the inner element of this guy, which happens to be this row, right, with two cells in it, and it's going to replicate it for as many entries as we have in our collection of data. Right? So that's the templating mechanism, very generic. And I come in here and I specify the placeholders. And the placeholder syntax is the double curly brace, which is similar to Silverlight and WPF. And then just give it the name of the value you want to extract from that current row. So each of my rows is going to be one of these objects, which has a course code and a course inside of it. So I'm going to specify course code here and course over here. Okay? And that's it. Okay, so you just define your template, you specify the CSS class, you create the data view, wire the data up to the data view, and point it to an element in the DOM, use this templating syntax, and it will replicate all of that content for you. There we go. Okay, so all of that was replicated in the client as we loaded it. There are a lot of other features in the data view, which we'll talk about in a second, but that's the default behavior, right? The default behavior is just load the data, bind it, replicate the template, and off you go. So here's the sys.ui.dataView class, and here's how we might use it. This is essentially what we just did. Okay, so wired up the data view to a template in your DOM and get things rolling. Now, just to give you a sense for all of the things the data view is capable of, I showed you the one property that we used, which was data. And that's the simplest way to use it. Just point it to some collection of items in the client-side code. Notice there's things like this, auto-fetch, data provider. You can specify a web service on the server and tell it to go retrieve data from that web service call. And I'll show you an example of that in a minute. Is fetching, you can find out whether it's fetching, what verb to use when it's invoking the web service, if you want to do an HTTP GET as opposed to a POST, which is the default. Parameters, timeout, et cetera. So you have a lot of control over this process if you want to dig into the data view a little bit and tweak some of these values. And here are the methods on the data view class. By the way, notice I have these annotated as if they were C-sharp methods, but that's really just a convention for documentation here. They're obviously JavaScript in the client. So here's methods you can call, get item, fetch data. One thing that's interesting about the data view is you can also use this to do explicit retrieval. So if you don't want to do auto fetch, which means as soon as the page loads, go ahead and get the data, maybe you want to do it in response to some user interaction when the user clicks on an input element or makes a selection in a list box or something. You can very easily initiate the request yourself by calling fetch data on the data view. Okay, one thing that's not immediately obvious is if you're using the templating mechanism, how do you get the attributes injected into an element when you're doing the binding? And in order for this to work, they added a namespace extension in the XHTML that they load in one of their script files, just called sys prefix. And you can prefix any HTML attribute in your client-side code with sys colon, and that will make it available to the templating mechanism. And this is standard XHTML, by the way. This doesn't violate any of the XHTML standards. It passes W3 validators, no issue, because it's just using the XML namespace extension to define the sys colon prefix. And then you can use the same data binding syntax that we showed you before. So I have a short example of this as well. So this is using attribute-based binding. And all I've done is augment my collection of courses here with some image URLs. And I've done the binding of the image URL to an image in an initial column to the left of the other two. So if we run that, notice it's binding not just the course code and the course itself, but also the image associated with the course. Okay. Now, one thing that they got some feedback on when people were seeing this syntax, was this is beginning to look a little cluttered, and my designers are going to freak out when they see this stuff, right? I want to hand my designers, vanilla HTML, and I don't want them tweaking any of these templating things because that would affect the binding process, right? So that's a potential hazard if you are working with designers. You don't want them to muck up the binding. So they also have an explicit syntax. Instead of using that implicit declarative binding that I just showed you, they have a mechanism, a function called sys.bind. And what you do is you call this in response to result table rendered, the item rendered function, and you just bind each element individually, you tell it what property to bind to, and it automatically creates the association. So what this lets you do the explicit binding here. So that same example I had before, now my table looks like this, right? Very vanilla HTML. Designers, you know, they're usually careful about not touching your IDs. They know that you're doing client-side stuff, so they shouldn't modify any of that. And then all I do is add a handler for the item rendered event of the data view. And inside of item rendered, I call sys.bind. I grab the element C1 in this case, and I set the inner HTML equal to whatever data item is currently being bound, and I extract the course code property from the currently bound data item. Okay, so that works exactly the same way, but now instead of having the markup inside of your HTML, you can isolate it in your script file, and of course you could load this script file from a separate location and have it completely clean HTML markup on the page. All right, a couple other things that are useful to know about. You can customize the templates, the template binding process. So this syntax right here, all of the content that's inside of this, let me zoom it in for you, all the content that's inside of here is actually JavaScript. So if I wanted to, I could do something like this. I could say course code plus the string space or maybe a colon, and then I could say plus course, right? So I could grab different pieces out of the current row that's being bound, and you can use any JavaScript functions you have handy to generate, you know, whatever rendering you want to. So it's a very flexible format. You can write your own formatting functions, whatever you want to, and inject those inside of the binding expressions. And then if you're doing that, if you're doing some custom formatting of your elements, you might need to know what the current index is. So if you want to do like an alternate display of colored and different colors for the rows in a table, for example, you can use the dollar index pseudo column to find out the ordinal number of the row that you're currently being bound to. And then you can also explicitly reference the data item with dollar data item. And these you can pull out of the out of any binding expression. So here's an example of binding with pseudo columns. So I've done a couple things in this example here. I have done the standard. I've written a function called format data item. And then down below here, I've used the dollar index to indicate what the ordinal index is of the row that's being bound. And I've called this helper function format data item, which takes a reference to the item and then generates this string format that I want to show as I bind to this collection of data. So if I run this guy, notice it's being bound using the formatting function, and the ordinal of the row is being showed on the left-hand side. I'll talk more about this syntax in just a second. This is another syntax you can use for getting the binding happening, but we'll get into that in a moment. Okay, so there's the example of using the template pseudo columns. Now, the other request that they often get from people using these features is, wouldn't it be nice if we could do a lot of this stuff without actually writing any script files, without bringing in JavaScript and having to maintain that ourselves? We just want to sort of leave it all to the libraries to do. And that is technically possible as well. The way this works is you go into your body element and you declare a couple of additional namespaces. So these are XHTML namespaces for data view and sys, and map them onto the following JavaScript types. And then in your element, where you want to have the data view do the binding to the template, you specify sys colon attach, give it the name of the object you want to associate it with, and then you can specify parameters for the object using the data view prefix, and then access properties on the data view. So you can do it completely declaratively if you want to. And that's the example that I had here. If I weren't using this helper function, I would have no JavaScript whatsoever except to bring in the files. And down here, I've done the sys.attach, and I've specified a couple other parameters as well. Now, this example, I'm actually going back to a web service to retrieve the data, and I'll show you that in just a minute, but I'm just declaring all these things in line in the HTML as opposed to programmatically. Okay, so let's talk about the web service invocation. The data view also supports this data provider and fetch operation to invoke script callable web services, WCF web services. So the service that you create needs to be a JSON-enabled web service, right? There's a template inside of Visual Studio for creating a WCF endpoint that supports JSON serialization and client-side proxy generation. So as long as those two things are enabled, the data view is perfectly capable of consuming data from a service like that. And let me just show you an example of one that I have here. So I have a service here. There's the SVC file. It just maps onto the sample data service class that I have defined right here. And this is what it looks like. And to make it a little bit interesting, I created a class to send data back and forth, sample data with just a name and an ID, and I'm using the WCF attribute annotations to tell it that it's a data contract with various data members. Then I'm specifying the service contract attribute here on my class. All of this will be generated for you by the wizard when you use it, requesting ASP.NET compatibility. And I have a function called getData that simply generates a bunch of item objects and our sample data objects and sends them back. Right? So all of this will be available to my client-side service right here. And I specify the service right here, and I told it the fetch operation, what method should you invoke within that service to retrieve the data, and I said auto-fetch, but like I said before, you could be explicit and do a fetch in response to a user interaction as well, if you preferred. So let's try running this, and let me bring up a trace utility so we can watch what's going across the wire and do a refresh. And you'll notice I loaded some scripts, and here's my call to get data. I know you can't read that. I'm just going to blow it up for you in just a moment. And the response from the web service that happened implicitly with that data view is right here. Okay, and that's the JSON serialized data structure that I defined in my WCF service, which was implicitly invoked by the data view during the templating binding process onto the table. Okay, so all those pieces kind of just fit together and started churning away. And you got the data retrieval from the client-side object. Okay, so a couple other little tidbits. Live bindings. This is an interesting feature. In addition to the double curly brace syntax that I showed you, they also support two-way binding syntax, which is the single curly brace syntax. And what this lets you do is let it reflect changes to data that it's currently being bound to. So if you are binding to an object in memory in the client-side DOM, some JavaScript object, and you're using this two-way binding syntax, a live binding, and that data changes, your data will automatically, your template will automatically be re-rendered with the new data that was updated. So let me show you an example of this. Just using client-side stuff. So here's live binding. So focus for a moment just on this first one. And what I've done, let me zoom in for you. What I've done is I've specified, first of all, I put the whole thing within a div. So this is all being bound as part of a data view templating mechanism. And what I've said is create the association between this element here, this input element. Do a two-way bind on the title property of whatever data structure we're currently being bound to. And I also want you to do a two-way binding on this H3 element. So what should happen here is anytime I make a modification to the input element down here, it should automatically be reflected in any other element that is doing a two-way binding to that same instance of the object in memory. And just to show you the objects, We're just going back to the server, no, title values. So I have a very simple example here. I am binding to this data collection, which is just a single element, so it's a collection of one, and I'm binding that to the div, so I'm just going to replicate that interior content once. But the advantage of using this mechanism is I set up the live binding relationships so that any time modifications made to this particular title property are made, they will be reflected in both locations. Okay, so let's try that. And notice both of these controls, the H3 and the input element, were bound to the title property of that object. And if I change the text here and hit tab, notice I get it implicitly reflected in the bound H3 element. Now, the H3 you can't obviously modify as a user, so it doesn't go the other way. But this is a really easy way to create associations between various elements in your client-side script and have them all point to the same data structure and reflect the data. Now, the other example here I have is using conversion functions. So I've done the same sort of thing. I've done a binding function, but in addition to the binding syntax, I can also specify a convert function, which says when you're taking the value from this object, pass it into this conversion function before you actually display the result as the inner content of this control. And I've done the same thing down here, where I've given it two conversion functions, so it knows how to convert to the format and from the format. And you can just make these up to do whatever you want. What I did was $2 simply prefixes the value with a dollar sign, and from dollars just takes the substring dropping off the dollar sign in the beginning. Right? And if we go work with that, notice I put in $1.55 and hit tab, this is reflected, but it's going through that conversion operation each time we do it. Okay, so there's that example. There's the conversion functions. The other interesting thing you do, and this is actually how that previous example is built. They implemented something called an observer pattern, and this is one you might run across in other libraries in JavaScript as well. And the way this works is you walk up to some data structure in memory that you have in JavaScript, and you say, make this thing observable, so that if anything gets modified within this tree of data, please send out notifications to anyone that's listening on this thing. So let me just walk you through this example here. It's kind of interesting. Observer. What you can do, so I'm binding to an array of elements with ID and name pairs. And in this array, when my page is loaded, I'm calling makeObservable. So sys.observer makeObservable, and that will take that data structure and essentially annotate it with these event classes that will fire whenever something changes in it. And then I'm doing a bind on this collection of data, so it's displayed in this ordered list down here, which you can see right here. So there's my ordered list. And then what I've done is I've given the user the ability to add new elements to the array. So anytime the user types in a new pair of elements and clicks on the enter button, it's going to go up here and just add the element to the array. And notice the simplicity of the model here. You don't have to think about the propagating changes. All you do is work with the data directly. And anyone that is listening for those changes using the binding syntax and the templates will automatically see those changes reflected. So here's my initial list of items that I have statically declared on the page. If I give it a new item, like so, it's automatically reflected up there. If I delete an item from the list, which simply takes it off of the end of the array, then it also shows up as well. Okay, so very intuitive way to work with controls that are reflecting the state of a current data structure. Okay, and the final piece I want to mention to you is the data context class. The data context class is capable of giving you a client-side data context. How many of you have worked with Link to SQL or Link to Entities? Anyone use that? Entity framework? Yeah, quite a few. So you're familiar with the concept of working with a data context in each of those environments, where you prepare the data context, you interact with the object model that Entity Framework or Link2SQL provide, and then you call update on the context to propagate any changes that you've made. So they created something very similar for the client side. So it actually works in much the same way. Any changes you make, which are done using this observable mechanism that we just talked about, are going to be saved out and turned into a change set, which is then passed into the server, and you can respond to it inside of your web service if you want to reflect the changes back to the client. So I have a small example here of doing exactly that. Oh, actually, I have a large example of doing this. let me get to that. So you can use this in the raw if you want to and just build your own web service that has a function for a save operation, and you'd have to parse through the change set that was sent across to you and figure out how to propagate that into your backend data storage. But what's even more convenient is they've built an ADOnet service proxy for you that's capable of invoking an ADO.NET data service, which you can expose on top of an Entity Framework or a Link2SQL set of classes. And it will make those available as a client-side proxy in your code. And then you can use this guy, the ADOnet data context, to actually invoke, make changes in the client, call save changes, and have it all propagate back to the server. So instead of sort of running through all the details here, I thought I would just show you an example of this working. And this example is one that actually ships with the current beta that you can download from the site, the codeplex.com site. And let me just show you an example of what's going on here. So this is using the Entity Framework to create a layer on top of an existing database with images and metadata for each of those images. And what they do is they use the ADO.NET data context to maintain the change, propagate the changes back to the server. So if I go make a change to one of these things, so let's change the text here. As soon as I hit tab, notice that it changed up in the bound element as well. So that was the observable pattern being used. And I can change this guy as well. Change this guy as well. So I just changed the first three. And then I can hit save changes. Let me set up a trace so we can watch the results go back. OK, there's the save changes. It was sent as a post request. And I'll zoom in so you can see what that looked like. So this is a REST-based API, and they're sending back information about each element that changed in a JSON encoded bunch of data. And the response coming back is right here that just gives you the change notification. So this guy just said, yes, changes were made. We're all good to go. Everything's reflected. And just to show you that that all persisted in this local database that they have here. If I shut that down completely and rerun it, notice the gobbledygook at the end of those titles is still there. So that was loaded from the data source that was persisted using the ADO.NET data context. So that kind of just gives you a sense for what's possible, right? Well, if you're working with Entity Framework or Link2SQL, you can expose that stuff with ADO.NET data context in the client and actually do client-side manipulation, have it flush changes back to the server, and off you go. Okay, I did want to leave a little time for questions because I know the preface to the whole talk was a bit disconcerting, perhaps. So let's do a quick summary here. All the features you saw are in the current release that I've been using up here, right? All the demos I'm going to give you. And you can download that from the CodePlex site. That's all available right now. And you're welcome to use these things, right? So it's if that works for you, feel free. However, efforts being put into this library have stopped at Microsoft. So they're no longer actively developing for the library. And they're putting future efforts into jQuery extensions. So what I'd recommend is that you make sure you're familiar with jQuery and you keep an eye on what the group is doing with respect to the jQuery extensions, and you're going to see a lot of stuff similar to the things that I just walked through show up in jQuery if everything goes well in the next couple of months. Right, so that's the goal. So with that, let's open the floor to questions. Anyone have a question? Yes, sir.
How do you apply different
How do you apply a different CSS style? You mean in the context of the data binding that I was showing you? Oh, yeah. So his question is the sys template is already occupying the class attribute of the surrounding element that's being bound to. Well, you can always add additional classes for one, right? So you can have multiple classes associated with an object. But also, more often what you'd want to do is actually apply styling internally to the elements that are being bound. And you could do binding on the class attribute of child elements as part of that process if you wanted to tweak the output. So it's not hard to do. Anything else? Okay, well, if anyone does have a question you want to come up and ask me, feel free. Otherwise, I will make the demos available at this site right here. And thank you all for coming.